Hello and welcome to the Raptors Reaction Podcast for Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm your host, Wim Wu, speaking to you after the Toronto Raptors lose another tough one on the road, losing to a very good opponent by one or two possessions, this time dropping by a score of 102-98 against the Dallas Mavericks. And a lot of things to go into this one. Obviously, a lot of frustrations because very similar to that Miami game, you play really hard, you shorten your rotation, you go all out, tough, you know, game overall. And then you come up short at the end. And honestly, a lot of things at the end that's sort of worth revisiting. But more than anything else, I think the biggest impression to me is just the Raptors look so tired tonight. Like so tired. I mean, I give them a lot of credit for pushing through it. But the guys were gassed. Especially when you look at a guy like Fred. I mean, I know you made a late three at the end there. Kind of just like chucked one up when the Raptors down four. And it cut it to a one-point game with about a minute plus left, which was great for a second, but when you take back and look at some of the shots he got, I thought he worked really hard for his shots, as he always does. I thought he did a really good job of distributing, getting downhill. He had 12 assists, which in a game where the Raptors shot 38% from the field, including only 8 of 32 from 3, 12 assists seems kind of miraculous for Fred, but just no legs on the jumpers. I mean, he got so many open looks today, wide open corner three looks, you know, open pull-up looks, open mid-range step inside the line against a drop defense kind of look, and he just couldn't make them. He was short on so many of his jumpers. And when you consider the fact that this is the fifth straight game in a row where Fred has played 40-plus minutes, and you've seen him take some punishment. Like, we saw that one game where he randomly appeared with a shooting sleeve. He's not doing that anymore. He's taking a lot of bumps and bruises and stuff like that. But more than anything else, he's just played, you know, this whole season at this high of an intensity. So it's going to catch up to you eventually. And, you know, he didn't have the energy. And I thought a lot of the Raptors didn't have the juice tonight. I thought Pascal, you know, had it for a couple of spurts, but really he looked kind of gassed. He was missing some easy chances here today as well. The Raptors just screwing up transition opportunities, you know, 4-on-1 fast break with four forwards, and they miss the shot somehow. And not even like, they got a wide open layup, but he just like shanked the layup. No. Like, they took a contested shot on a 4-on-1 fast break, and the Mavs went the other way for a 2-on-1 fast break for an easy layup for Luka. And Luka tonight, obviously tremendous, 41 points, 14 rebounds, 7 assists. The Raptors had nobody to stop him, no proper coverage really against him. And I would say that this is sort of an anomaly or anything like that, except for the fact that ever since Luka has joined the NBA, which was back in 2018, he has torched the Raptors every single time. Like, every single time. I mean, he's only 4-3 against the Raptors in that stretch, but I remember being a rookie Luka Doncic putting, like, 35 on Kawhi. So I genuinely think that, like, some of the defensive coverages against him just haven't really worked that well. Obviously, the Raptors have had strong individual defenders during that stretch of time, especially on the wing, but nothing worked against Luka today. And the Raptors tried switching coverages a few times. You know, that momentarily got them a few kind of stops here and there. But when you look at the overall picture, that's an absurd amount of points to give up to one guy. And the Raptors, by the way, generally speaking, when you think about the Raptors' defense, they're so good at keying in on one guy, taking him out of the game. And the way Luka has dismantled the Raptors each time they play, it's genuinely really impressive to watch. Even though he does get to the free throw line quite a bit, and, you know, there's a couple of things here and there, but ultimately you show respect to a really, really great player, and Luka clearly is that. But let's just start with the fourth quarter and what happened there. So the Raptors, at the end of the third quarter, they were leaking oil. Like, they were really leaking oil. It felt like they were really exhausted. All of a sudden, they get a three from Justin Champagne off a driving kick from Fred, and then Fred hits one of his three threes on the night. And, you know, that gives the Raptors a chance to go into the fourth quarter only down four, except for the fact that after making that three, the second three by Fred, the Raptors for some reason pressure the inbound instead of getting back in transition, and the Mavericks literally get a 2-on-1 fast break, and they kick it to the corner for, I forget who hit the corner three, maybe Tim Hardaway Jr., but they give the three right back, which made no sense at all. So the Raptors are down 7 heading into the fourth quarter, and I actually thought the Raptors defensively, they found another gear there. I thought over the course of the game, the Raptors tried playing Luka in more or less isolation coverage. What they were going to do is probably switch a couple of coverages, right? They're probably going to switch in terms of, you know, the original defender on Luka was Scotty Barnes, right? But Scotty picked up some early foul trouble, was fouling foul trouble all game. And so, you know, the Raptors started putting pressures on him, started putting OG on him. And, you know, they were kind of switching a lot of these matchups, right? They didn't want him to pull up from the three off the high screen. And Luka kind of recognized, okay, you're going to switch on me. That's fine. I'm going to get the smallest defender to come up, which is Fred. I'm going to try to get downhill. And he's very, very strong. He's either going to get downhill just off the screen, or he's going to like back a guy down to get to his spots and then try to work his little turnaround game, draw a second defender, and then kick out. Like, this is a very classic thing that Luka does, right? Really, really work the Raptors in the mid-range area. And in that third quarter, what you saw was Luka drawing fouls. Fourth quarter, you saw Luka drawing fouls. But, you know, the Raptors just didn't have a good answer for Luka. Now, I figured once he had like 28 or so points, essentially, in the midway through the third quarter, was like, you have to try something different. And I know it's unpleasant to try to trap against a team like Dallas, who do have really good shooters, who didn't shoot the ball well tonight, but still they have really good shooters. And Luka obviously is a premier passer. You're basically asking for open threes, but you kind of had to do something because Luka was getting down into the paint all the time. So the Raptors started going in the fourth quarter to a blitz and try to recover kind of defense, where they would sort of send two guys on the ball, you know, keep Luka from getting downhill. And, you know, a couple of possessions it worked. I figured, like, honestly, just the Raptors playing Luka one way for three quarters and then suddenly changing up for the fourth, like, you know, they were able to collect a couple of stops. You know, he threw a lazy pass over the top. Pascal was able to pick that off. The Raptors were able to sort of rotate and sort of get out to a couple of shooters. And it actually was interesting because the Raptors did, on back-to-back possessions, blitz Luka. Luka made the extra pass. Maybe there was another swing pass to open the and then the Raptors' rotations were there. And they contested that first three, and it was looking good. The thing is, both times the Raptors failed to get on the offensive glass, which is another issue when you do that little scramble thing, is that all of a sudden you really give up on the offensive glass. And so, you know, the Mavericks get two favorable bounces, but also they're very smart to attack the glass against a scrambling defense. And both times that resulted in the Mavericks getting even more open three in the fourth quarter. But then the Raptors also did a pretty good job of locking in for a couple of stretches, you know, when they kind of reverted back between that blitzing and trapping and versus sort of the switching and individual defense. And they got a couple of stops. The thing is, the Raptors just didn't have the legs offensively. And you look at so many of these guys, I'm not really sure who it is that you look at specifically in terms of, like, they had a great game today. Maybe OG Anunoby, in terms of, I thought he did a really great job of, you know, even just going back to the Heat game, a lot of possessions where he drove, got into the middle of the lane, got stuck, and then kind of really couldn't do much with it. Right. And that's sort of been a trend that I wanted to see OG do more of. Well, OG today, multiple times driving into the teeth of the defense against the closeout, getting into the lane and then finishing through contact, through the contest. He had a decent game offensively, 19 points on 8 of 16 shooting. He didn't even hit the three that well, and he still got 19 points. But everyone else, I'm just kind of like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, Pascal, 20 points and 7 of 18 shooting, really uncharacteristic game with 5 turnovers. Fred, you know, 18 points on 4 of 20 shooting, 3 of 15 from 3. His streak of 4-plus threes per game has come to an end here. And, yeah, it was a struggle. So I was really curious as to sort of how the Raptors are going to generate offense late in the game. And a lot of it was sort of, you know, the Raptors finding an extra gear, right? Whether that is, you know, in a, what, 4-point game, Fred VanVleet is able to drive, probe, you know, the Mavericks rotated, contested, you know, switched on to some bigs, forced Raptors late in the shot clock, and then Fred finally drives downhill and then gets into the lane and draws some contact and gets free throws. The Mavs review it, but the Raptors, you know, get the call anyway, and Fred goes to the line for 2 free throws. You know, Fred, drive, get around, and then finds Chris Boucher crashing in from the weak side for a lob dunk. Great play, honestly, and great patience by the Raptors to get some of those shots. And honestly, Pascal got a really good look too, where he had Brunson in the post in the middle of the floor. He couldn't get all the way to the rim, but got up for a clean look at a jumper. And he's been making a lot of those over the course of this stretch here, and he just couldn't fully make it there. So I think offensively, the Raptors actually got decent looks, even though they were tired, except for the fact that they really came down to the last possession where Raptors were down to about 30-some-odd seconds left. The Mavericks have a chance to ice the game with a bucket. But they blitz Luka. Luka gives the ball up, and the Mavericks are able to sort of work it around, and they try to get it inside. And Chris Boucher with a really good rotation to dig down, break up the pass inside to Kristaps Porzingis, and all of a sudden the Raptors collect a loose ball, and they go the other way with about 10-15 seconds left. And it was very obvious to me, and I think it was probably obvious to the Mavericks too, that even though it was only a 2-point lead for Dallas, and so, you know, obviously a two does something for you here, right? But the Raptors are just very insistent on getting the three. And, you know, what we saw was Fred VanVleet dribble up the court. A play before this, he pulled up, he just jacked one up for about, you know, 30. No rhythm in this game for Fred, but he made that three and it was great. Comes back down. You know, he tries to do another one of these sort of long pull-up threes, pretty fairly contested. It's short. The Raptors get the offensive rebound. They get it back out to Fred. He works in pick and roll with Boucher. And the Mavericks are in pretty good defensive position. Everybody's sort of at home. And, you know, as usual, Porzingis was sort of playing in a slight drop coverage. Not like super deep drop, but like he was like, you know, around the elbow area. And so Boucher reads that. He pops out to the three-point line instead of rolling. Fred, you know, gives it to Boucher. And I was really curious, like, okay, so there's about 10 seconds left there. Boucher's not really going to take the shot, right? But he did take the shot. And, you know, I would say it was about as open of a shot as you could maybe get in that situation. I don't know. Nick did have a timeout. They could have ran something. They chose not to. They chose to let it run. And, I mean, a semi-contested pick and pop three is not the worst outcome when you just look at it on paper. However, we're talking about asking for a game-winning three from Chris Boucher, right? And Chris is shooting like 20% from three on the season. I understand that he can give you some threes. Of late, he's shooting the three marginally better. Like, he was 2 of 4 today, so I guess he was 2 of 3 at that time. You know, I get that, and I get that you need a three because the Raptors were so tired. I honestly think they would have like spontaneously combusted if they played another 5 minutes in this game. But that was not a very good possession by the Raptors. I understand that, you know, like maybe they make those shots, but like those are very heavily contested shots that, you know, for Fred and for Boucher, I mean, he's just not a guy you turn to in that situation. I'm sorry. Like, he shoots 20% from three. You're giving yourself a 20% chance to take a 1-point lead to also give the ball back to Dallas to Luka, who's one of the clutchest players in the league. Like, I don't know, man. It was, you know, just not a satisfactory end to the game. The Raptors fought really hard. And then the other part, which is something that needs to be discussed, and I think there'll be a bigger focus on it because of the fact that it's Scotty, because of the fact that it was at the end of the game. But there was a very curious decision from Scotty where the Raptors are down only one after Fred made that miracle three, and Luka is sort of working his little pick and roll thing, gets a screen. He picks off, he chooses to go after Scotty Barnes, the rookie. Now, you might say, you know, this makes sense. He's a, you know, you want to go after the guy with five fouls. The Raptors playing a short rotation. They're not even going to bring in another guy. Like, Nick Nurse might literally play four players at this point instead of playing Yuta, Malachi, you know, Delano or Svi. But, you know, also you could just say Luka just wanted to pick on the rookie because he had a pretty good, you know, success against Scotty this whole time. And I think Scotty did a pretty good job of keeping him in front. Like, a couple of possessions before that, Luka tried to attack Scotty. Scotty put a hand up, made Luka shoot over the top with a length, and, you know, Luka wasn't able to make it. This time around, Luka doesn't try to take it inside, goes for a step back move. And even though Scotty is, like, he's out of position in the sense that, like, Luka set up the move nicely where he got Scotty to take one step backwards. So his momentum is carrying him towards his own basket, preventing the drive. But then Luka was going to step back. So even if he did contest, it was going to be a very late contest. I'm not sure how much it would have affected the shot. Having said that, though, to not contest there, and literally what Scotty did was he saw Luka go into his move. He didn't try to like lunge in last second, right, and try to make up the gap. He literally just like turned his body and just kind of like almost as if to say, you're not going to make this, and waved his hand at the guy. And Luka did make it. Now, of course, Luka has been shooting the three poorly this season, but he wasn't shooting the three poorly this game. And when you really look at it, Scotty had done this multiple times over the course of the game. There were other instances where it's throughout the, you know, the first three quarters where Luka would have a step back move against Scotty, and he would get Scotty to bite on the move so that he could get free for the step back, and Scotty kind of waved them off then as well. So I, you know, even then I don't really like it, right? Like, just I just compete. I even if you don't believe he'll make it, just compete. Also, why would you not believe he'll make it? That's Luka Doncic. Like, that's like a future MVP in this league. This is all NBA player right there. Rookie of the year. Like all the accolades that you would want. Clearly a guy who could hit that shot. Okay, so he didn't make it earlier in the game and you decided to wave him off. You just got lucky then. Like you have to contest that shot. And Nick immediately called timeout. He kind of snapped. He was looking at his assistant coach. He's like, what am I going to do with this kid? How do you not contest in a situation where it's a one-point game, Luka Doncic is going up to shoot? I don't care how far away you are. I don't care what he's shooting on the night. That's Luka Doncic. You have to close out. And Scotty literally walked away from Luka. And to be honest, it just looks dumb as hell. What are you doing? Then all of a sudden, a one-point game becomes a four-point game, two possessions. The Raptors, you know, at least get that, you know, lob dunk to Boucher, and then they got two chances to sort of go ahead and at the end there. But ultimately, a couple of things happened for them. You know, I don't think, by the way, this is like a confusion in coverage. There was no confusion in coverage. They're playing man-to-man defense. And it wasn't like they were going to blitz Luka at the end there. No. This was just Scotty chose to switch off there. And I'm baffled, and I'm sure Nick will be asked about this. So when that quote comes down, I will definitely try to relay it as the reporters, you know, ask Nick his postgame questions, the standard postgame questions. Otherwise, though, I think, you know, in terms of actually, you know what? That quote did already come down. So Nick was first to speak, and he was asked about that specific Scotty Barnes decision. And he said, quote, we didn't guard it hard enough. And Nick was asked to clarify, hey, was it a miscommunication or missed assignment? And Nick said, well, I think we probably guarded him. We probably could have guarded him harder, which is a bit of an understatement. Let's be real. Choosing not to play defense against Luka Doncic is a wild decision, especially in a game where he had 38 at that point. That just wasn't smart. But otherwise, though, the Raptors competed really hard. Once again, they go to their seven-man rotation, which has been... I mean, the Raptors are playing better. Don't get me wrong. Not playing the bad players has definitely helped the Raptors play better. And clearly, they were very competitive. Like, I thought, for example, you know, I was pretty optimistic after that Heat game. Oh, this is a very top team in the league. They competed with them. Yeah, they lost, but fairly optimistic. Same thing against Phoenix. It's a top team in the league. They play hard. They didn't get it done, but I feel pretty good about it. At this point, when you're talking about the third game in four nights, you know, against on the road, you're just looking at this team, like the Raptors just clearly didn't have that juice. I mean, like, yes, they competed through, and like, you can't say they didn't have a chance to win. And I guess Nick's goal ultimately is to win the game. Like, that's not, I mean, you could think about all these other things. You could, you know, talk about the risk or whatever. I mean, ultimately, the goal is to win games, period, right? So Nick is trying to win the game, and I think this is the Raptors' best chance to win this specific game. But, I mean, the guys just look so tired. When you look at the minutes, 44 for Pascal, 43 for OG, 42 for Fred. I mean, Pascal's sitting 2 minutes per half. 2 minutes per half. And, you know, these guys are giving you everything they have. It's a really gutsy performance. I respect these guys so much for doing it. But I think when you look at just going forward, like, what can you do about this? Like, I mean, A, maybe you build up their endurance so that they can play these kind of minutes, right? And maybe some of these guys kind of just need to get adapted to sort of this level of workload. But that's also a little bit asinine to say that. I mean, no one's really going to be adapting to play 44 minutes in January. Like, for real, no one's going to be doing that. So Nick has to find a way to at least trust one more guy, at least just in the first half of games, to buy some rest. Because I think every single minute, and I mean every single minute, I mean every single 30 seconds they can find for guys to sit right now, it would really help. Because, you know, Pascal still has some juice because of the fact that he was starting the season late because of the shoulder surgery, which obviously put him at a disadvantage. But in this context, he at least got some time to sit and, you know, not necessarily burn himself out. When you look at a guy like Fred, though, I mean, Fred's done this all year. He's played, you know, so many games. And when he has a couple of these shooting performances, we know how good of a shooter Fred is. For him to shoot 4 of 20, the types of shots that he was missing today, like, if let's say you had a fresh Fred for a game like this, I think Fred really would have gone for, like, 35, just based on how open the shots were. But he just didn't have any legs. You know, didn't have any legs. And the rest of the guys, I mean, Precious still hustling, Boucher still hustling, Champagne still hustling, but... that's it. I mean, I don't know. You can't burn out your core guys that hard. So, I mean, it'd be great if the Raptors were able to close out some of these results, I think we've been feeling a lot better about it. We'd still be cautious about the fact that the Raptors are playing so few, but when you play this hard with this few number of people and you ask this much of them and they lose, I think there's probably a little bit of psychological drain as well. At least something to be cognizant of. But in terms of the actual game itself, I thought it was a lot of interesting things tactically. So I'm going to take a quick break. On the other side of the break, we're going to break down a little bit more in terms of how the game was played and talk about a couple of the individual performances from the team. And, just look at more at this Raptors loss to the Dallas Mavericks. You've been listening to the Raptors Reaction Podcast on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Welcome back to the Raptors Reaction Podcast for Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I'm your host, Wim Liu. Continue to recap the Raptors 102-98 loss to the Dallas Mavericks. So I thought the start of the game for the Raptors actually was quite positive, especially throughout the course of the first half. The Raptors were able to be in the game based on the fact that they really dominated at the rim, which is something really surprising against the Dallas Mavericks. That's a team that plays two traditional bigs. They got a 7-3 shot blocker and Porzingis down there. They're honestly, their starting lineup is quite big. I mean, Luka is their point guard. He's 6'8". I wouldn't say he's the greatest defender, but he's still 6'8". That's something. Dorian Finney-Smith is also a pretty active defender. And just generally speaking, that's a team that has won a lot of games on their defense. And we saw the extent of their defense in the second half, I would say. But I thought the Raptors did a really good job at the start of the game in terms of how they got to the basket. And I thought one easy way the Raptors got scores were OG Anunoby running the floor hard, getting deep post position, sealing his guy, and then Pascal or whoever the guy running point. But I know specifically Pascal found OG three times with the high-low pass in sort of semi-transition where OG did the work early, got deep post position, sealed this guy, one up for the finish. I thought that was great. And I think those are when you're looking at OG to be that third option for you scoring-wise, obviously his own self-creation is not up at the same level as Pascal or Fred, but he can finish plays as well as some of those other guys can. When you're talking about catch-and-shoot threes, when you're talking about him finishing around the basket, and I thought that was a great way for the Raptors to score. There's a lot of plays. Obviously, the Raptors get on the offensive glass, 16 offensive glass, offensive rebounds for the Raptors today as compared to 10 for Dallas. Obviously, Dallas got two key ones at the end of the game. But, I thought the Raptors did a pretty good job attacking the glass. There were several sequences where two Raptors would fight for the glass. And I know this definitely happened in the fourth quarter, but there's a play where Champagne was the first one to get to the loose ball. He couldn't tip it in himself, but he touched the ball first after the Raptors missed, and he got there ahead of the Mavericks. And after he tipped it, Boucher caught the tip and dunked it on the putback to complete the putback. And it was almost like an alley-oop play just on tip-ins, which has to show you how hard the Raptors are attacking the offensive glass on that front. And 16 offensive rebounds for the Raptors against, again, a team like Dallas would have a lot of size. It's not easy, but those are clear strengths that they have, but that's what you need from them, right? Like, look, if you're not going to play any shooters, right? I mean, your only shooters are OG Anunoby and Fred VanVleet. Fred was 3 of 15. No, obviously, normally he would make a higher percentage, but clearly he's really tired. And then OG Anunoby was 1 of 5. You know, obviously not the greatest shooting night for him. If you're not going to play any shooters, you better at least get on the glass, and that's what the Raptors are doing. Unfortunately, it's just not fully tilting in their fashion, and you know, when you compare how the Raptors play today with their seven-man rotation, which, you know, you'll add Gary to this, you'll maybe add Ken Burch to this, you know, and that's largely speaking what your sort of a playoff rotation will kind of look like, although they're playing a playoff rotation in January right now, which is not fully advisable. That's kind of, you know, the strength of the team. Obviously, we know that, offensive rebounding. But when you compare it to Dallas, for example, one of the ways Dallas was able to pull away in the second quarter, the Raptors actually held a four-point lead after the first. You know, the Raptors' defense wasn't the most solid, I would say, throughout the game, but especially in the first quarter, I thought they gave up a lot of easy ones. Second quarter, though, Tim Hardaway Jr. comes off that bench and immediately goes to work. Transition basket, a wing three, drive to the rim, finish, reverse layup, finish, and he just, boom, instantly gives the Raptors, cause to call timeout to sort of adjust their defense, because this guy is coming off the bench and he's changing the game. And you know, he finishes the game, Tim Hardaway, with 16 points and 7 of 10 shooting in 27 minutes, hyper efficient. You know, he had a couple of turnovers, which was a little strange, but you can't really ask for better shooting than 7 of 10 from a shooting guard, and he made 5 of 5 from the from two, and he was 2 of 5 from three. Like, that's the kind of shot in the arm that the Raptors don't have. I would say Chris Boucher is giving them a pretty good effort off the bench, and he's playing well, but it's a different kind of position. I think that's exactly what the Raptors need, is a guy who can come off the bench, get a little bit on his own, but mostly just catch and shoot. Because the way the Raptors are playing right now, between the offensive rebounds, and you know, obviously, off an offensive rebound, there's a very good chance that the defense is sort of out of position. And if someone's open for that sort of kick-out three, that is, generally speaking, your best bet outside of just, like, going out for a putback layup or something. You know, that's where the Raptors lack for, is that sort of secondary bench scoring. And they have to work so hard for all their baskets. And honestly, in a game when they work this hard, I mean, they only shot 38%. I mean, it's kind of unbelievable. So, you know, that's, if the front office wants to, if the front office believes in what Nick is doing and believes in what this roster is showing, like, you have to make that genuine attempt to add a shooter to this core just to sort of give them some relief. And then when you're Nick, though, like, you probably have to look at it for the next game, right? The Raptors play, you know, Washington on Friday, and then they play again on Sunday. Like, yeah, they'll have a day in between to rest and stuff like this, but, like, what can you do to help support this cause? Is it worth it to at least give Yuta Watanabe a chance in the first half? You know, maybe not Yuta, maybe Svi. Maybe Svi. Svi is more of a shooter than Yuta, although right now neither guy is hitting any shots. But, like, is it worth it to give them a chance just to see if you can buy some time? Maybe if they hit one or two shots, you can put them back in the game again. I don't really know. I think at least with Yuta, if he's physically ready, you know, at least he can play defense for you and sort of maintain that sort of defensive identity the Raptors have actually shown to have against some of these teams. But, you know, you just have to find a way. And even if you do take a momentary loss, like, I think even in the long run, like, I mean, ideally in a regular season setting, you play a 9-man rotation. And I guess if you had Gary and Kem available to the 7 that you had today, well, then all of a sudden, boom, there you go, a 9-man rotation. But just because two guys are hurt, I mean, two guys are hurt on every single team in the NBA right now, at least. So you kind of have to still manage your minutes a little bit. And the way that the team is getting pushed, I mean, I just feel bad for them in a way, because, like, they play so hard, but, like, a lot of their mistakes are coming out of fatigue. Like, the Raptors missing a lot of these free throws, to me, feels like fatigue. Like, they just look really tired, and they kind of split some free throws when they don't really need to be splitting free throws. You know, they have situations where Fred's, you know, starting to turn the ball over because he's exhausted and he's throwing lazy passes. Or, like, you know, early in the fourth quarter, Pascal is caught on a switch against Porzingis, which I don't even think is a mismatch by any means. Yeah, Porzingis is bigger than Pascal. I mean, Porzingis is bigger than everybody on the Raptors, right? I don't mind. I don't think that's a mismatch whatsoever. You don't need to double team. What does Pascal do? He reaches in and tries to swipe the ball, even though Porzingis just is holding the ball, posting up with his back to the basket, waiting for a turnaround jumper. That's just, like, a mistake out of fatigue. The fact that the Raptors can't finish these transition opportunities, those are mistakes out of fatigue. You know, the fact that Fred can't hit jumpers, you know, at the rate that you expect him to, that's fatigue. Pascal, you know, even he had a lot of turnovers today, and just in terms of just, like, organizing the offense, the guy's not really knowing where to be. That's partially, to me, fatigue. When you're really tired, you're kind of, you don't think straight. Like, you're not really, you know, organizing yourself the way you need to. And that, by the way, could be a bigger issue for the team, in the sense that, like, especially, I definitely noticed in the second quarter, but just the number of times Pascal had the ball on the wing or whatever, usually in these sort of Fredless lineups, right? Fred has to sit for, like, you know, 30 seconds each half, because that's all he can, that all Nick Nurse was willing to let Fred sit. But, you know, when Pascal's running the point, you'll see this a lot, where he'll hold the ball in the wing and you'll have to, like, wave, direct, talk to his guys, because between Precious and to a lesser extent Boucher, I think Precious is much more guilty of this, he's having to, like, just tell these guys where to stand, which part of that is setting up the play. Like, you see point guards doing this all the time, but the other part is just he's telling them where to stand because they're literally in the way. Like, they have to sort of figure out where to be. And it's not that complicated specifically. Like, if Pascal's on the left wing and he wants to drive downhill because, you know, he wants to get downhill and he's got a smaller defender on him or whatever, you don't wait on the left side of the dunker spot. You wait at the opposite side so that when the help comes towards you, you're able to dish it off. And unless you have, like, a really good opportunity and you duck in on the near side and you can get Pascal to get you a quick pass, you go for a layup, I guess OG did it a couple times, that's fine. But like for the most part, you need to know where you're spacing out to. And that's where Pascal is sort of like having to rearrange everybody just to sort of set it up and set up his drive. And listen, Pascal's job is hard enough as it is right now, between all the attention and the double teams and all that stuff. Everyone else just really know where to be around them, right? And the spacing issues. I mean, look, the Raptors are going to have spacing issues because like nobody can hit a three right now, you know, especially when they're when their legs are this heavy. But the other part of spacing issues, like some of these are just basics of basketball. Like you got to know where to be as a big, especially as a big who's not shooting like Precious, right? A big who is, you know, mostly there to crash the offensive glass for putbacks or, you know, catch a lob or something like that. Like you got to know where to be. And, you know, there was a play where OG and Anobi's posting up and Precious just like flashes in behind him. Why? Like, what is that? Like, did you want the post up instead? Because, you know, you're trying to make a low pass, like a high, not a high low pass, but just like a medium to low pass. Like that doesn't make any sense, really. Like just know where to be on the floor. Don't make it harder for the starters. It's hard enough for them right now. And yeah, I think for me, like really the Raptors could have won this game. Like I thought, you know, Dallas didn't give their best effort in this game. I know Luka had his great moments, but he kind of took the whole team out of rhythm. You know, a lot of these threes weren't dropping for them. They shot 9 of 33 from three. Luka, who's been kind of off with his threes, end up kind of saving them with 4 of 10, including the game-winning three. You know, all that. But, like, I just think if you burn out the Raptors, they're not going to be able to play at their peak, right? So it's really just about managing their energy. And look, who knows? Maybe the Knicks goes to a seven-man rotation again next game against Washington, and the Raptors are full of energy for some reason. You know, you just never know how these things go. Maybe they're full of energy and they win the next one. But I think in the long-term prospects, like you do have to at least, especially in the meantime, like I understand that coming into the game, Gary's been game-time decision for the last couple of games. So maybe you plan of, okay, well, we're going to play an eight-man rotation. We're going to have Gary. He's going to be available. Maybe he doesn't play the full 40 or 45 the way Nick probably wants to. But like maybe he plays like 25 for you. And even if he played 25, then all of a sudden you don't have as many guys playing 40 plus. But he's been unavailable and he's been on the sideline. So maybe your game plan is just like, okay, well, I guess he's not in. We got to go with our guys. But I just think Nick has to open it up just a little bit here. Just one more guy. I'm really begging. Because I think the other thing is like, yeah, it's hard watching them, you know, limp around and sort of like look so sluggish and, you know, a 2-point game at the end, all they're thinking about is the three because they can't even bear the thought of going to overtime. I mean, what would be worse is, you know, knock on wood, like literally knock on wood, but like if any of these guys get hurt, I mean, you're going to have a way bigger problem, right? The Raptors are just going to start dropping games like consecutively if they start to, if they lose any sort of their starters. And you know, obviously the team has a medical staff and the team is, you know, obviously Nick works in tandem with those guys and everything like that, but you just don't want to take these challenges. You don't want to take these risks. It's not going to be worth it. So, in terms of some of the individual performances I want to touch on, from the Raptors side, I thought, you know, I'm not sure what they're getting night to night from Scottie Barnes. It feels really strange because I thought the other game against Miami was really active, you know, made a number of really athletic plays. Obviously, the end-to-end dunk was the highlight of that bunch. You know, I think Scottie made a couple of plays here. Like, I thought early in the game it was cool that he posted up Kristaps Porzingis and was able to go up for a hook shot over a guy who's 7'3". Like, that's not easy to do, especially not easy to make, and he made that. There's a play where late in the fourth quarter, after he stopped Luka, right, played some good defense, put a hand up, forced Luka to shoot over the top, Luka missed. Going down the other way, the Raptors have Scottie, who wants to post up Luka. Fred gives him the ball, which I thought was a nice sign of trust from the vet. Also, I thought Fred was just tired. He's like, okay, you want it? Here you go, man, please. By all means, be my guest. So he gives it to Scottie. Scottie posts him up. Takes a lot of time, really. And right before the buzzer goes off, Scottie hits Luka with a little bit of a shoulder fake and then turns around the other shoulder for the turnaround jumper and makes it. And that was really nice. Even Luka was like, okay, all right, you got me there. That's not bad from the rook. So there were some moments too from Scottie, don't get me wrong, but I thought on the whole, I mean, obviously the foul trouble really disrupted his play, only 28 minutes for him. But he just didn't feel as impactful as maybe you would have expected. And I think part of that goes to the way the Dallas Mavericks are playing their defense. I guess Miami, for example, they did a lot of zoning. So Scottie was able to flash in between the spaces and catch the ball in the post or in the middle of the floor and make a play from there. And he's pretty good at doing that. Dallas played much more standard drop back defense with Porzingis in the middle. Not a lot of trapping, not a lot of blitzing. Obviously, when Fred's out there, show high and try to deny the three-point arc. I didn't even think they did a great job with that, to be honest. I thought Fred just missed a lot of open looks. Like, really, Fred really could have. Like, he got a lot of open looks today, Fred, and he just didn't knock them down. And that might have been the number one reason the Raptors didn't win this game, was just that Fred, it's a make or miss league, and he missed a lot of shots today. But, you know, Dallas was playing a much more standard defense. But even having said that, though, it just feels like Scotty, some games you'll really notice him, and some games you really won't. And today, I mean, you didn't really notice him all that much until that one mistake he made at the end. And, I mean, I think for Nick, there's probably a conversation we had with Scotty, like, you know, the main thing has to be the main thing, right? Like, it's the same thing as like the no look passes, or like the look back at the guy after you steal the ball and you sort of intentionally slow down on the fast break to then dunk it as he comes closer to you, rather than, you know, when you're just running ahead of the pack. Like, the extra stuff is cool. The extra stuff is really cool. Like, I genuinely understand it, you know, but at the same time, the main thing has to be the main thing. The main thing has to be competing to win. And I know Scotty, and I know that's what his mentality is. I know that, right? Because you look at the coaches that he had at Florida State, what they've said about him, what Nick has said about him, what his teammates have said about him. Everyone knows he's a competitor. But you can't have a situation like that in the game. And Nick, realistically, Nick doesn't have an option. Like, he's not going to bench him for this, because you can't bench him. Like, literally, what are you going to do with those 28 minutes that he played tonight? What are you going to do with the fact that he's probably going to play 35 most games, 35 to 40? You're not going to replace that with anybody. Nick clearly doesn't trust anyone else. But you have to have that conversation. Whether that's the vets coming to talk to him, whether that's the coaching staff, you got to do a better job there. You got to compete at all times. It doesn't really matter if you get put on a highlight. I'm sorry. Like, do the Utah thing. Like, yeah, he got posterized by Anthony Edwards, but he keeps jumping for these shot blocks. And you have to respect that kind of mentality. And I know Scotty has that too. I think that was a momentary lapse, or maybe was upset with the whistle or whatever it was. But ultimately, you know, not the right time for that. I thought, other than that, though, most of the guys played their role well. I thought OG Anunoby did a really good job of driving downhill, which was cool. I already mentioned that earlier, but I just wanted to highlight that in particular. I think obviously there's a lot of focus on him being the third option and sort of what he does and this and that. For him, this is something that I really enjoyed seeing today. But when he attacks the closeout, just drive all the way in. Like, I understand that defenses will come over and help and do whatever. Just drive all the way in. Don't stop in that mid-range area. Because when he stops, he gets stuck. And sometimes he can make a play. Like, maybe he finds the kick out, or maybe he finds his feet. You know, against Milwaukee, we saw that one move where he put an up fake and then did a step through, which was really, really nice. But these are, like, few and far between. Like, for the most part, I just want to see him go all the way to the basket and try to finish. Just take a strong to the hole. And I thought OG did a great job of that today. Made a number of those plays. And, you know, that was a good approach, because I think this is really promising. The fact that he had 19 points despite only making one three and only getting two free throws. I think OG, you know, this is a better game than, for example, what he played against Miami more recently. In terms of the other guys, Champagne came in for 16 minutes. I'm not sure what Nick told Champagne to do. I mean, I guess it was to, like, hey, you know, you have a lot of energy. We're playing the least out of these guys. I mean, it's not even a 7-man rotation. It's more 6.5 with the way Champagne's playing only a few minutes, only 9 the other game, only 16 today. And I don't know what Nick's specific instructions were, but it's probably just like, just give it a lot of energy out there, crash the glass, obviously, and then try to like pressure Luka coming up the floor. You're probably not going to turn Luka over as he just brings the ball up, but at least maybe turn him a few times, make him a little bit tired, make him kind of push you or whatever, kill the clock a little bit. Just do something. The issue is Champagne came into the game and twice in the span of like 3 minutes fouled Luka 90 feet from his own bucket. So the result of, and he fouled him another time in the fourth quarter as well. So the result of this was that the Mavericks were in the bonus for a 9-minute period in the fourth quarter. Like that's a bit excessive. I thought he didn't really find the right chord there. Obviously, the, you know, he's not going to get any calls because it's Luka versus an undrafted rookie. You know, but still, you got to be a little bit smarter with that. And I thought, you know, otherwise, I thought Champagne did fine. You know, knocked down his open three when he had a chance to in the third quarter. Got on the offensive glass as you expect him to do. Got a steal. Like, you know, I don't think it was a bad shift by Minis outside of the fact that he made some rookie mistakes. But maybe that's kind of the thing is, you know, when you're only trusting 6.5 guys and, you know, 1.5 of those guys right now are rookies. And, you know, we saw Scotty make a rookie mistake. We saw Champagne make some rookie mistakes. And in the fourth quarter of a one possession game, not that everything comes down to that specifically, but those are things that you look back on, you kind of regret, because if you need to win games consistently in the NBA, you need to not make mistakes consistently in the NBA. And some of these guys continue to make mistakes. So in order to wrap up the show, I'm going to hand out the three stars for the game on the Raptors side. I think for me, the first star is OG Anunoby. I really liked his role today. 19 points, 8 rebounds, 4 offensive rebounds in that stretch, 2 assists, 3 steals. And the 2 assists were nice too, because those were both coming off of drives where OG did drive hard, got all the way deep into the paint. Like, and I mean deep in the paint, I don't mean like he attacks and then he gets trapped at the elbows. Like that, we've seen a lot of that kind of stuff, and it doesn't really work out. We're talking about when he drives all the way to the basket, maybe even gets under the basket, but the double team will definitely converge there. And OG does have some interior passing chops. This is something that was noticeable with him even when he was a rookie, like 5 years ago. And he has some of this more interior passing than in terms of his perimeter passing, which I think is very, very average or nondescript, really. But in the paint, he's actually a pretty good passer. And he was able to finish off a lot of these drives with a little shovel pass to the guy in the dunker spot. And you know, Precious and Boucher, if they space out properly off of these drives, they're going to get easy looks. And if they don't, no one's going to get any look. So it's really up to them to organize themselves. But 2 nice assists there from OG. And pretty good defense overall. I thought if anybody played good defense on Luka, which I really don't think anyone should deserve some praise for the defense they played on Luka, considering he had 41 points. But I thought OG was the best bet for it. And, you know, the issue is the Raptors are switching a ton and the Mavericks are intentionally seeking out the switches. So OG didn't actually get that many chances to guard Luka one-on-one. But, you know, in terms of one-on-one wing stoppers, OG is your guy. And maybe they could have fought harder to sort of stay on that. Maybe they could have gone under a couple of screens to try to maintain the matchup. But then again, I mean, what are you going to do? Going to go under on Luka Doncic? He's just going to shoot and he's going to make it. So not a lot of great options against great players. I don't know what to tell you. So OG's your first star. Second star for me, I'm going to give that to... This is hard to find. I guess Chris Boucher, 15 points, 12 rebounds, 3 steals. Yeah, okay, the 3 at the end. I mean, I don't even blame him so much in the sense that he did get the pass to him. He was semi-open. Porzingis was in drop coverage. And he was closing out hard because, you know, that's what you do at the end of the game is close out hard no matter who it is, whether it's, you know, Luka or Chris Boucher. But I don't blame him for that shot. I think, you know, that's fine. It's an acceptable shot. Like if he made the shot, I think everyone would be celebrating it, right? So it's hard to necessarily just be fully focused on the results of it. I do think the process of it is though, like a guy who's a 22% 3-point shooter should not be taking the go ahead 3. I don't know. It's hard for me to get around that. But overall, he played a really good game. He also had the key steal to force the turnover there against Dallas, where I thought Porzingis made a really good duck in and he was going to just dunk the ball and put the Mavericks up 2 possessions, but Chris Boucher was able to step in and intercept and keep that ball alive to Pascal, who was able to bring the ball up. But yeah, Chris is playing well. 15 points, 12 rebounds, 3 steals, 6 of 14. He did hit 2 threes. He is spotting up for 3, which is real interesting. Like you're seeing him relocate on the wing. He's starting to make more of his shots, but Chris is playing well. And then your third star... this is genuinely tough. I guess I'll give it to Fred. He didn't shoot the ball well at all, but the 12 assists for Fred was definitely very vital. It just seemed like he had to work so hard to drive downhill, get something, and then, but, you know, he did set up a lot of looks, whether that was him running the pick and roll with Pascal, where the Mavericks were kind of going drop coverage on Pascal and sort of letting him shoot, and they were able to sort of find him on the short roll where Pascal was able to catch the pocket pass, go up with a little floater. He even hit a floater from the free throw line today, which is incredible touch when you think about it. That's not easy whatsoever for a floater / push shot / whatever you call that thing. You know, obviously him and Pascal were able to sort of have a little bit of two-man game. But I mean, I wouldn't say overall this was a great game by Fred by any means. It's just 3 stars is 3 stars. And it's genuinely hard to find like even more than one player for the Raptors who played well tonight, which again, it's not fully their fault when you have to put in overtime every single shift. In terms of your Gerald Henderson Award winner, I'm going to give that to, this is very hard. I guess I will give that to Tim Hardaway Jr., 16 points, 7 of 10 shooting, even much more impactful in the first half than the second half. But I think for me, I'm just really jealous because I feel like he's the exact kind of player the Raptors need for their team. And you might say, well, Gary Trent's a very similar player. You know, that's fine, but I think they need like 2 of Gary Trent on the team. And Tim would be another guy. I'm not saying go trade for Tim Hardaway Jr. I don't even think Dallas wants to really entertain that specifically. But yeah, I mean, that's the style of player I'd be looking to add a guy who can kind of come in and be a microwave scorer off the bench, catch and shoot, hit some transition opportunities, 16 points on 7 of 10 shooting for Tim Hardaway Jr. So that does it for the podcast. Thanks, everyone, for listening. As always, you can find The Raptor Show wherever you listen to podcasts. And when you do find it, please continue to rate, review, and subscribe. And yeah, as for me, I'll be back on Friday when the Raptors play the Washington Wizards. And I'll, of course, be doing The Raptor Show every Monday to Friday between 2 and 3 p.m. with my co-host Alex Wong. So, you know, I'll talk to you then.